There's value in every medium, and some people enjoy reading, some people enjoy watching, some people enjoy listening. But I think in video and audio, you can convey so much more of the personality of the hosts, of the teachers, of the learners, and so on.
That's Mark Pendleton, founder of Coffee Break Languages and the award-winning creator of some of the most popular education podcasts ever produced. The Coffee Break podcasts were the very first language podcast geared toward beginners back in 2006. And since then, their suite of language podcasts have collectively been downloaded over 300 million times. But how did they get here? What's so different about the Coffee Break teaching style that sets their podcasts apart in an increasingly competitive podcast world? Also, since their podcasts are all completely free, how does Radiolingua actually earn money and bring revenue into their business? Well, today, Mark will share his philosophy on what content they always share for free versus what they charge for. And he'll also address a common question from new creators. Is competition a good sign or a red flag? Stay tuned and we'll cover it all in this episode of Everything is Teachable.
Welcome to Everything is Teachable, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes to learn how everyday creators have transformed their skills and passions into online courses and businesses. To introduce this week's episode, here's your host, Melissa Guller.
A former high school teacher of languages, Mark Pendleton launched Coffee Break Spanish in 2006. From humble beginnings with basic microphones and a makeshift home studio, he has gone on to create courses in over 30 languages, building a team of native speakers and teachers working from Coffee Break HQ in Glasgow, Scotland. Mark believes that anyone can learn a language, and that learning can fit around your lifestyle. It's as simple as maximizing the time you have available, be that when you're walking the dog, driving to work, at the gym, or having a coffee break. The Coffee Break podcasts have been featured as best of iTunes on numerous occasions. They've won European and British podcasting awards, and they're now downloaded over 3 million times every month. With regular video content, blog articles, social media, and online courses, Coffee Break Learning is helping millions of people around the world turn their downtime into their due time. Well, Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much indeed. I'm delighted to be here.
We are delighted to have you. And I have to say, I've actually been poking around some of your Coffee Break podcasts myself on my lunch breaks to really get to know some of your languages. So hopefully I can also greet you by saying, hola, Mark.
Bienvenido a la podcast. Perfecto. Muchas gracias. Muchas gracias.
That's about the extent of it. But I'm curious, just to go all the way back to the start, where did your own interest in languages begin?
I think I've always been fascinated by language and languages. My grandmother was Italian. She lived in Scotland with us, but we didn't really use a huge amount of Italian at home. But we would certainly learn some phrases, and she would teach myself and my brother and sister some Italian phrases to use, whether that be, you know, close the door, come here, things like that. And I remember also when my older sister started learning French at high school, she taught me the words and phrases that she was learning at school. And I just thought this was so cool, so fascinating that, for example, what we call a book has a completely different name in another language. And I think it's always interested me from that point. And I found it really enjoyable learning French and a little bit of Italian at school, and began to develop something of a hobby collecting language courses. it's perhaps not the coolest of hobbies, but I really enjoyed it. And it's led to what I'm doing now.
Well, it's definitely a practical hobby to have. You can say hello and greet way more people than I can.
I think the interesting thing is that at that point, we didn't have the same access to things as we have now. It was so much more difficult to get up-to-date language and to get access to different languages. And I remember having, you know, really weird and wonderful languages in my head. If I found a course in Swahili or in Ukrainian or something like that, this was just such a cool find. Now, of course, it's so much easier to get access to all sorts of language content and to get up-to-date content as well. So that makes learners have more access to things and it's much easier to do now.
Yeah, that access is huge. And you brought up a great point. So how did you teach yourself languages, since it did look much different when you were starting to learn?
Well, I studied French in high school. And then in my final year at high school, I also did some Italian. And then I went on to study languages at university. And it was very much a kind of traditional way of learning. And we were learning the grammar of the language. We were learning to use the language in a variety of ways to communicate. And it's something that I enjoyed. I enjoyed being in the class and trying out the words and phrases with my friends in the classroom. But I think I also, what I really enjoyed was using it myself and trying to write some pieces in the language at home and trying to build my own vocabulary and learn, get more access to the languages through books and books in the library and so on. I remember at university, we would be doing literature and poetry and so on in the language. But the only access that we had to up-to-date language was from a newspaper that was perhaps 3 days old. It would be delivered by train to Glasgow from France, and it would be very text-based. There wouldn't be many pictures in it and so on, but that was the only access that we had to that language. But that even gave us the chance to see what the language, how the language was used in real life. And we started to see the ideas that the things that we were interested in were being talked about in this language. So it's always, I feel it's always about trying to find content that interests you in the foreign language. And that was done very differently back then from how it is now and how it can be done now.
Mm-hmm. And at that point, did you start to pursue anything about languages professionally, or you just kept it a hobby?
Well, I went on to study at university. I did some French and Italian at school, and then I added in some Spanish and a little bit of Norwegian at university with a view to becoming a language teacher. That's what I always wanted to do. I came from a family of teachers, still many, many teachers in the family, as many teaching families are. But I wanted to become a language teacher, in a sense, to share my passion about languages with other people, be that younger learners in schools or indeed with adult learners. I did quite a number of adult evening classes with adult learners in my local area.
And so you had a pretty clear idea early on you wanted to go into teaching. I think that's probably unique for a lot of people, to be surrounded by teachers.
Yeah, I mean, I think perhaps nowadays people would be discouraged by other teachers and their family from going into teaching. But I just thought it was such a powerful thing to be able to share what I love with other people and hopefully inspire them to be as excited and as inspired by the subject matter as I was. And I think it's a huge honor to be able to share that the inspiration with other people.
Yeah, I agree. It's one of the most rewarding feelings as a teacher when you see the light in somebody's eyes light up when they finally get something or they've applied some of the concepts that you've taught them. I mean, there's nothing that really can compare to that feeling.
Indeed. You're absolutely right.
So you had the idea of being a teacher. Certainly, I'm sure most of your family at that time was teaching in traditional settings, in person, mm-hmm. typically. So how did that evolve into the idea for Lingua Web and kind of into your earliest days?
Okay, so I started teaching in a school in the south side of Glasgow, and I absolutely loved teaching there. The idea for creating Lingua Web, which was my very first website, came from the fact that we only ever have a certain amount of time with the learners in any one group of learners. So perhaps one class of learners are only with you maybe 3 hours a week. But I wanted to give them the access to learning French or learning Spanish more than those 3 hours in the week. So I used to create exercises and games and sample answers for tests and so on. And I set up a very basic website to provide my own students with those additional resources to help them improve their French and Spanish. And then at that point, teachers from other schools started using the site, and I began to see the ways in which publishing information online could benefit lots of learners, not just my own students. And that was suddenly quite exciting, being able to provide access to materials for learners from all across Scotland at that time was really exciting.
Well, that's interesting because not only are you giving your own students more opportunities outside of just those 3 hours, like you said, but now you're able to reach more students who are learning from other people or even in other ways.
Yeah, absolutely. What was very interesting at the time is that the fact that that was probably before a time where teachers generally are very willing to share their resources. I think at that time, there was perhaps more an idea of when a teacher taught their class, they taught their learners and they expected their learners to know what they had taught them. So at the time when I remember a teacher from another school being surprised when one of their learners came out with this answer that they had got from LinguaWeb. They said, well, where did you get that answer? They thought they were getting a tutor or something like that. But they actually had found this answer on my website at the time, and they used the phrase or the expression that they had learned there. And it was in a time before learners were able to get access to that kind of information. And perhaps it was more difficult to get other teachers to contribute to LinguaWeb at the time. But thankfully, the world has changed, and I think teachers everywhere realize the power of being able to share learning and share their ideas and both with other teachers and with learners.
Mm-hmm. I mean, credit to you for being open-minded to share, because like you said, it wasn't really the norm back then to be so open to letting so many people use your resources.
Ultimately, I just wanted my students and any other students who happened to benefit from the materials to get the opportunity to use them and to build their own skills.
That's a wonderful quality, though, I think, of a lot of teachers who are really good teachers, is that the core of what you want is just for more people to learn and to be as helpful as you can.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
So this started, I believe, in 1998 with LinguaWeb. And then... Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us about how did that kind of evolve and then move into Radiolingua?
There was a stage in between, and that was a project that I ran for 29 schools across the west of Scotland. In the year 2000, I was appointed the project coordinator for this project. It was a very innovative project at the time, which would bring together young people from some very small schools to some very large schools, and they would all be brought together in a sort of virtual centre of excellence for languages. This involved us combining language learning through filmmaking and with music and animation and photography. And then in 2005, we started making our own podcasts with the students. Now, this was in the very, very early days of podcasts. We launched a podcast for the project, which allowed the students involved in the project to build their language skills and to keep up with the latest news and developments of the virtual school. But I was suddenly really, really excited about podcasting, as it offered the perfect medium for language lessons. Listening, I think, is such a key skill when you're learning a language, and the versatility of a podcast meant that learners could learn wherever it suited them. And for our learners at the time, our learners were younger learners, learners between the ages of 13 and 18. And very often for them, it's not really cool to be seen to be learning. But if they've got their earbuds in on the bus on the way to school, no one needs to know if they're listening to music or if they're learning a language. And this idea of being able to share that learning through podcasting was just wonderful. And that's really where I began to think, yeah, that this is definitely something that we should look at further.
I've never considered that before, that with a podcast, kind of similar to now the Kindle, people don't know what mm-hmm. you're listening to or what you're reading. So if you want to learn a language on the subway or read a dirty book on the subway, you can, and no one will know.
Absolutely, yeah. And I guess the idea is that being able to learn with no one else knowing that you're learning is a very powerful thing.
It is. It's almost like it gives you the permission to not have any judgment that other people could be putting on you.
Indeed.
So back in those earlier days, you mentioned that was very early in podcasts. I can't even say picking up popularity. I would say I hadn't even heard of them yet. So how did you teach yourself and the students as well how to podcast?
by trial and error, really. We recorded the earliest episodes of these podcasts and then on to Coffee Break Spanish when we started Coffee Break Spanish. I'll explain how that happened in just a moment. But these were recorded on pretty cheap microphones. I actually cringe a little today when I hear the early episodes, I think, as everyone does with their first episodes. But I'm a musician, so I had some experience of plugging microphones into computers and so on. But I just learned on the go with podcasting.
I love that you mentioned how cringy they were, because I think that's a good sign later on, because when you're first getting started, it's okay if it's cheap mics, it's okay if it's not perfect, but just getting something out there so that later on you can evolve and grow and look back and say, oh God, what did I do? That's a sign of growth. It's a good thing.
Absolutely. And I think even today, what we find is that our most popular podcast episodes are the podcast episodes which were recorded back in 2006 as the beginning of the Spanish course. So even now, the top episodes are episodes that were recorded like 13 years ago. So that's still quite cool.
That is very cool. Well, you mentioned this earlier. Let's take us back to early days of Coffee Break.
Yeah. So in 2006, I was still working for this project that was bringing together all the secondary schools in the area. But in my evenings and at weekends, I started to developing this idea of Coffee Break. I wanted to create something that would be a course that would start at the beginning and continue on from there. And the daughter of a friend of someone that I worked with actually was wanting to learn Spanish. So it kind of fitted that we were going to record this idea of me teaching Cara Spanish. And we recorded a few episodes and we thought, yeah, this works. This seems to be good. And we put them out as Coffee Break Spanish. So it had nothing to do with my day job. This was very much a side project, but I was still working full time until 2008. So I didn't go full time on Coffee Break until 2008, two years later.
Mm-hmm. So what did those 2 years look like for you?
Very, very busy. They also coincided with my children being, well, one child being born and the other one growing up a little. So very, very busy to balance everything, to balance daily life and obviously to give 100% to the job that was paying my salary and so on. But also this idea that suddenly what we were doing was starting to be picked up, starting to have an effect, and people were enjoying the podcasts. When we launched Coffee Break Spanish in 2006, we were the first beginner Spanish podcast on iTunes. So it meant that there was no, in a sense at that stage, there was no competition. There was nothing else really similar around. And we recorded the audio, we put the audio out there and people started listening. And then we had the idea that, well, people were saying they wanted transcripts or lesson notes. So we thought, well, we could charge $1 per lesson for the transcripts. And we couldn't really believe it when people started paying for them. So that's when we started to think, well, actually, this could become something that was, you know, that is sustainable and that is actually, perhaps we could buy some new microphones with it or something like that. And then it just began to develop from there. So right up until 2008, we put out, I think it was a full 80 episodes, so two seasons of our podcast, Coffee Break Spanish. And all the time we were selling the additional materials as lesson notes and as then we started doing enhanced podcasts, which were a little bit clunky at the time, but it allowed us to put the words and phrases on the screen of people's devices, which the devices started having screens to put the words on. So we were trying to grow with technology as it happened.
Mm-hmm. And something interesting too, for people who haven't yet had the pleasure of listening to your podcasts, I think it's very unique that the way that your seasons are built is that they're lessons or even stories that build concepts on each other, and that you have early seasons geared toward beginners and then later seasons as people listen, it advances. And I had never seen anything like that before.
Yeah, I mean, I think now there are a lot of podcasts out there that just sort of hit a kind of intermediate level and keep going at that intermediate level, just providing more content for intermediate learners who perhaps want to increase their vocabulary or see further examples of the language in use. But from our very early days, we felt, well, there's no point in putting something out there that is for intermediate learners, because then the people who haven't reached that stage still need something, and therefore we wanted to start at the absolute beginning and really focus in the early stages on building a very, very solid foundation on which then learners can build with our later seasons. And the idea also that we tried to do from the very beginning was emulate the learning process through having a teacher and a learner on the podcast. So in every episode of the early seasons, for all our languages, there's always a learner and a teacher, and sometimes an additional native speaker as well, depending on the language. The other key element in everything that we do is progression. So ultimately, people need to move on from where they left off. And if they're coming back to the next episode of the podcast, then we always build in a little bit of review from the previous episode and then continue on with new content. And then perhaps two or three episodes down the line, we'll pick up again on materials that were covered a few episodes previously. So repetition at key points. And this allows us to, in a sense, program the learning and give people a path to follow. Because I believe that yes, it's great if you know which path you want to take in your learning. And lots of content is available that allows people to choose their own path. For me, if I'm learning something, I'd quite like someone who knew already the path or had already gone down that path themselves to tell me which path to take, because then I'm going to avoid the potholes and I'm going to avoid the detours and so on. And that will allow me to follow the path that someone has already identified.
When you explain it like that, I think your teaching background is quite apparent, that you approach podcasting like a teacher instead of an interviewer or a lot of the other still very effective methods. But for something like languages, it seemed like it's a natural fit for the podcast. And then kind of moving forward, I know your business did continue to evolve past transcripts. So do you want to talk a little bit more about how that continued to grow?
Yeah. Well, we thought about the transcripts, and the transcripts, we had this sort of business model from the beginning that we would never put the written word anywhere on any lesson notes that would be available on the website or anything like that, because if people wanted to see how the language was written, then that was behind the paywall, if you like. So ultimately, we gave enormous amounts of free audio out there, but we kept any written content behind the paywall. And this meant that people who wanted to access the written content would have to, in some way, pay to get access to these bonus materials. Now, the bonus materials initially were put on basically a membership site. We started to for each episode that we published, we would put out what we called the main podcast, then a bonus podcast, which gave a little bit of review. And then we also put the enhanced podcast, which would have the words on the screen, which then developed into a video version of that, and the lesson notes as well. So these were all organized through a membership site. And that's where people would buy a membership to access the bonus materials for each season or for each level of the language. And we also then started to introduce new languages. So in 2008, we introduced French. We started Coffee Break German in 2011, I think, Italian 2015, and then Chinese in 2017. So adding more languages and levels. We also started to put together shorter courses in a number of languages. So we actually have a short course called 1 minute French, 1 minute German, 1 minute Latvian, and so on. And that's now available, I think, in over 30 languages. So trying to develop out the range of content that we had.
And as you were developing out those different content types, certainly you have many today between the podcasts, I know you have videos, a blog, and courses. So how do you see each of those different elements of your business?
I think for us, it's all about building the Coffee Break brand. We have podcasts, as you say, we've got videos on YouTube, we've got our blog with articles about language learning and about specific languages, and of course our online courses. And in a sense, everything should lead back to the courses. Everything should kind of be the funnel towards getting people to buy the courses. Ultimately, is by selling the courses that we can afford to continue to build the team and make more stuff. But I think it's also about making learning possible and affordable for everyone. We put massive amounts of free content out there every single week for learners through the podcast episodes, through social media content, and encouraging people to try out their languages on social media, our blog articles, our YouTube videos, and all of that free content. Yes, there is at some point in the free content a mention of, if you'd like to get more out of your learning, then consider the course. But it's a balance. We want to provide free content, and we do provide enormous amounts of free content. But ultimately, we are a business, and we do sell our courses in order to be able to continue to make new content.
I think that's a really important point that you made about how it's a balance and that you are a business. And for languages in particular, I think it was interesting when earlier you said that you decided that you would keep written content behind a paywall, because I think a lot of people might default to the opposite, that you can read our website, you can read blog posts, but then anything audio or video even, you would have to pay for. But for languages, the ability to kind of, like you said, to try out the languages, to listen to a few podcasts, to see if they enjoy the way that you guys teach, which is very well done, even the type of language or which language they might want to learn, I think that that's a really smart approach. And it's clearly working for you guys after how many millions of downloads are we at now?
about 300, 300 yeah. million.
So just a few yeah. people seem like they might be enjoying learning with you. Just a few.
I think sometimes you can convey, I think there's value in every medium. And some people enjoy reading, some people enjoy watching, some people enjoy listening. But I think in video and audio, you can convey so much more of the personality of the hosts, of the teachers, of the learners, and so on. And that, for me, I think is a key thing. I mean, anyone listening to this will undoubtedly have picked up my Scottish accent, and the Scottish accent can't be conveyed in a book or in a written piece of material. And equally, the interaction between our hosts, between our teachers and learners on the courses, I think all of that is so important. And that can be conveyed so much more effectively through audio and video. So in a sense, having people read something like a blog article, which then potentially converts them into a paying customer for audio and video materials, is a much bigger jump than someone who has already kind of bought into the relationship, in a sense, that they're experiencing, that they're eavesdropping on, if you like, that they would get much more clearly through audio and video. And even in the podcast, for example, with my colleague Francesca, with whom we do the Coffee Break Italian podcast, for example, one day we were talking about different masculine words in the Italian language for different things that you could put on a pizza. And I suggested the word pollo, which is the word for chicken. Now, Francesca almost had a heart attack there in the studio as soon as I said this idea of putting chicken on a pizza, because for an Italian, that's just ridiculous. It's ludicrous, putting chicken on a pizza. But this has, you know, the laughter from that particular moment lasted about maybe 2 minutes in the podcast, but it's lasted 2 years in the ongoing discussion about chicken on the pizza over the course of the different episodes and through the social content. But whenever then we're looking for an example of something, the chicken pizza always comes back. And this kind of fun, in a sense, it's educational fun, but that always comes back through much more clearly through video and audio. Now, if we had done the same in written format, it just wouldn't have worked. So I think that's why we like doing it that way, going from the audio and the video to the written side of things.
Yeah, I love that. I don't know if you can have a spontaneous chicken pizza moment in a blog post.
I don't think so.
I think that kind of thing can only happen when two people just have a moment and then other listeners get fortunate enough to hear it later on. Actually, speaking of your audience, I'm curious, how did you find listeners, especially in the early days? How did you find people to start tuning in?
In the early days, again, because we were there in the very early days of podcasts. I mean, I think we went onto iTunes when there were about 200 podcasts in iTunes, and we were the only Learn Spanish podcast. So we didn't I was going to say we didn't spend money on advertising. We didn't have money to spend on advertising or anything like that. We simply put the content out there and hoped that traction would come from people sharing it and people commenting, and then the natural algorithms of iTunes. And I mean, we were podcasting before iTunes, so that kind of content was much harder to get out there. But as soon as iTunes came around, we also got featured a few times in the early days in iTunes, and that helped to get more people to Coffee Break Spanish. But then the idea of having Coffee Break Spanish and then a very similar recognizable logo for Coffee Break French with different colors and so on, that helped to even if someone was only interested in learning Spanish, they saw the Coffee Break French content and perhaps shared it with other people that they knew that wanted to learn French. So there's a little bit of crossover between the different podcasts. Again, in those days, we weren't talking about advertising. We weren't talking about having even things like Facebook ads or something like that. These just didn't exist at the time. So it was very organic at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And then how have you seen podcasting shift between then and now? I mean, it's grown so much.
It has. We used to have to explain what a podcast is all the time. When we would do trade shows and go to like the language show or education shows, we always had to start the conversation with, do you know what a podcast is? Then for a time, we stopped using the word podcast. We thought, yeah, let's try just focusing on audio content. And that didn't really, we said it's like a radio show, and in a sense our content was a bit like a radio show because it was very informal, very chatty. Fortunately, we can now use the idea of a podcast again because it's almost universally understood. I think the other aspect of the shift in podcasting is for us, there's lots more competition. There are a huge number of language podcasts out there, and some of them are absolutely fantastic. But I kind of feel, in a sense, there is a place for everyone. We've stayed very true to our style, and each time we launch a new language, we use a very similar structure and the same friendly approach. We always say it's like having a coffee with your friend who happens to be able to help you learn the language. Now, there are other podcasts that do different things and do, I don't know, up-to-date news about the country where the language is learned, or the language is spoken rather, or interviews with people and so on. There's lots of different ways of doing a podcast. And as I say, there is space for everyone because some learners will like one, some learners will like the other. But the fact is the vast majority of learners will listen to both. And that's where there's a benefit when you're talking about free content as an initial start. People will engage with all that free content and then perhaps make the decision as to where they want to put their money based on the content.
That's an excellent point about how you stayed true to, you know, the friendly type of conversations you were having and how there's space for everyone. I imagine a lot of listeners who are maybe considering any content, whether it's a podcast, a blog, a video, a course of their own, it's easy to look out there today and think, there's no space for mine. There's already a podcast about languages. There's already a blog about health and wellness. Who am I to do this? But to your point, people have different tastes. There are listeners who will happily consume, you know, 10 to 15 podcasts a week around something. So I love that there's space for everyone.
I think also the fact is that if there is already a podcast or a course in the area that you're thinking about, it means that there's an audience for it. So that gives all the more reason for you to go ahead and do something. For example, when we decided that we were going to do our Coffee Break Chinese a couple of years back, we thought very, very carefully about whether we should do a Coffee Break Chinese because there is so much excellent content out there for learning Chinese. But ultimately, we felt that our style was very different from everything else that was out there, and our approach and our structure that we've established over the years. So we went ahead with our Coffee Break Chinese, and it's been a very popular course. So we're pleased with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the approach, like you said, that's what differentiates you or anyone listening from anybody else. So the topic, sure, maybe it's very popular to your point. That's probably a good thing. But who you are and your personality, that's something that only you have. So hopefully people might feel, you know, inspired to start, even if they see a lot of other people doing what they hope to do.
Absolutely.
Well, I just have a couple more questions for you. I'm curious, are there any, you feel, like big misconceptions that people have about your work or your business?
Initially, the misconceptions that people had was about the size of our business. And I think at the beginning, they thought we were a huge team with premises and studios and so on. For the first 10 years, we recorded everything in a makeshift studio at home. Indeed, at the time we started, my small home office was through a door in our bathroom. But we were still asked by people if they could come and do a studio tour and if there was parking available. But we weren't really encouraging
people to... parking near my bathroom, sure.
Yeah, I think, though, it's important to say that individuals can have a huge impact, even if they're on their own in a small home studio with very little equipment. That is the beauty and the freedom of online courses and podcasting. We obviously are a lot bigger than that now, and we do have our own studio and own premises in not just at home, which is nice. But I think the other misconception that has been a very specific misconception with regard to language learning is the whole idea of a native speaker versus, if you like, an experienced learner. So in the first two seasons of Coffee Break Spanish, I am the teacher. Now, I'm not a native speaker of Spanish, but when I speak Spanish, then Spanish speakers understand me perfectly. I've spent a lot of time in Spain. And I think at the beginning, some people thought, well, why should I be learning Spanish from a Scottish person? Will I start speaking Spanish with a Scottish accent? Of course, that's not the case. But I think what we conveyed through the lessons and through the content that we were producing is the fact that a non-native teacher can actually exemplify the path that the listener would take themselves. So if I've reached a level of speaking fluent Spanish, then you can too, because you're listening to this and you can go through that. Whereas if I'm a native speaker, well, that's the skill that I have as an inbuilt skill, and how could you possibly reach that? So that was a bit of a challenge to get over. But I think people have kind of understood that actually, no, it makes sense to learn from someone who's done that learning already.
That's a great point, because native speakers, they never had to learn in the same way. It's just something that happens to you as you grow up.
Yep. And they perhaps haven't had the troubles or the experiences that you've had overcoming particular concepts that you can explain in your own language or in the language of the learner.
Mm-hmm. And they probably haven't gotten stuck in the places that somebody who's learning has gotten stuck before and then can describe.
Indeed. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. So in terms of what your business and life looks like today, I mean, first, how many people are working now today?
We have, there are just four of us who are full-time, mm-hmm. but we have a number of other people who do 2 days a week or 3 days a week and perhaps combine that with other things. So, for example, I mentioned Francesca earlier. She teaches 3 days at the University of Strathclyde and then does 2 days with us. And likewise, we have other people who are teaching in schools and then do 2 days with us. But there are, in total, there are 16 of us now involved on a weekly basis to put the content together. And then we also work with sort of freelancers to do particular aspects of it or to work in particular languages. We have a fantastic team and we work together in our premises and a studio in Glasgow now. So we are there most of the week.
Mm-hmm. And then what does your week look like in terms of what are you spending your time on? And do you feel like you have a balance with, you know, your family and the rest of your life?
Still pretty busy. I always thought that as time would go on that I would be able to, you know, take a little bit of a step back. But I guess now with more people, my work has started to include much more management of people and projects than actual production. I'm still involved in the production, but I guess I'm more involved in the strategic side of the company and looking at ways in which we can grow and to develop either new content or new content, new languages and new areas for our learners to be able to practice their languages.
Mm-hmm. And what is kind of coming up next for you guys, or what are you curious about?
Well, we definitely have some new courses in the offing. We've got new levels of our current courses and perhaps a new language, but I'm not allowed to talk about that quite yet. It depends when this podcast goes out, but we will be announcing that later in the year. We've also just started building a new video studio, so we're going to be doing lots more video. I think video is It's interesting both from the point of view of video content for the likes of YouTube, but also content for our online courses. And we are trying to build our new video studio. The plan at the moment is to build it sort of like a kitchen. So the idea would be that you're actually literally coming from a coffee break in the kitchen as we make these videos with the team sitting with our coffees and teaching in the kitchen. So that's the kind of idea for our studio.
That's very fun and clever, because then you can drink coffee the whole time.
Absolutely. And sometimes we need to, when, especially if it's a long lesson. Mm-hmm. I think mainly we're looking at building our own skills and getting better at what we do and getting better at ways of sharing what we do with a wider audience. And I think really I'm very excited to see where podcasting and online courses are going, because I think there's still so much to happen. There's still so much coming, and it's just the beginning, I think. It's fantastic to see podcasting being so mainstream and everyone and every device having some way of accessing the content. And hopefully that will just continue.
Mm-hmm. I'm very excited too. Well, before we wrap, where can people connect with you? Or if they do want to be the first to hear about this secret language we can't talk about yet, where can they keep up to date?
Well, if they head to coffeebreaklanguages.com, that's the main website. All our courses are at the coffeebreakacademy.com. And of course, you'll be able to find us on social media by searching for Coffee Break Languages or the individual language that you're looking for, Coffee Break French, Spanish, Italian, and so on. And you'll be able to find us there.
Perfect. And any final words of wisdom or any inspiration for our listeners today?
For anyone who considers themselves a learner, and I would hope that that kind of means everyone, because I think everyone is a learner. There's a quote I love from Sarah Caldwell, who was involved in opera, and she said, "Learn everything you can, anytime you can, from anyone you can, because there will always come a time when you will be grateful you did." And when I'm doing presentations with young people in schools and so on, I think that's such an important message to convey to them. You can learn all the time. You can be learning new skills and new ideas. And that can be applied as much to the learning process as indeed the teaching process. So if you're a course creator, I would say put all your passion into your courses, and then your learners will learn more effectively. If you can convey that excitement about your subject matter, your courses will be all the better for it. But also for course creators, keep learning. Keep learning to be a better teacher and to investigate new strategies of sharing your passion about what you do.
I love that. Well, I'm certainly feeling inspired to go learn something over my coffee break today. So I just have one final burning question for you. How many languages do you know?
No, speak, communicate in. I always say that it kind of depends on your definition of how many languages do you speak or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm fairly comfortable in quite a few languages, definitely in French and Spanish and Italian, and less so in German, Portuguese, Norwegian, a little bit of Chinese now, some Japanese, some Swedish, a few languages.
You dabble in
but
a
I just
few.
Love learning them. Well, but dabbling is good. Dabbling is good.
Agreed. Well, Mark, thank you so much again for joining us today.
Not at all. It's been a pleasure, and just I wish you well with the podcast. I think it's a fantastic way of sharing passion about learning.
Thanks so much for joining us this week. You can learn more about Mark, Coffee Break Languages, and Teachable in our episode show notes at teachable.com/EIT6. Before you go, make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you can receive new episodes right when they're released. And if you're enjoying the show, we hope you'll leave us a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. Reviews let Apple know that great listeners like you are enjoying our show, and they help us reach an even larger audience. So thank you so much for your feedback and your support. On behalf of Team Teachable, we hope you enjoyed this episode about learning and teaching languages with Mark Pendleton. We'll see you in the next episode of Everything is Teachable.
This podcast is produced by Teachable, where our mission is to empower creators to transform their knowledge into income. To date, we've helped over 60,000 creators build and sell online courses that have been shared with almost 20 million students. and we're just getting started. To learn more or start creating for free, visit teachable.com.